The year is 1803.
A newly appointed president, Thomas Jefferson, found himself locked in a bitter political struggle with the outgoing Federalist administration of John Adams. In the waning hours of his presidency, Adams had made a flurry of judicial appointments, attempting to solidify Federalist influence within the government. Among these was William Marbury, designated as a Justice of the Peace for the District of Columbia. However, Marbury's commission, the official document confirming his appointment, was not delivered before Jefferson took office. Jefferson, seeking to undo his predecessor's last-minute maneuvers, instructed his Secretary of State, James Madison, not to deliver many of these commissions, including Marbury's. Marbury, feeling wronged, took his case directly to the Supreme Court, asking it to issue a writ of mandamus, a court order compelling a government official to perform a duty to Madison, forcing him to deliver the commission. This seemingly minor dispute over a piece of paper would ignite one of the most foundational legal precedents in American history, Marbury v. Madison. The Supreme Court, led by Chief Justice John Marshall, faced a precarious situation. If they ordered Madison to deliver the commission, Jefferson's administration might simply ignore the order, severely weakening the fledgling court's authority. If they sided with Jefferson, it would appear to be a capitulation to political pressure. Marshall, a brilliant strategist, navigated this dilemma with remarkable ingenuity. He ruled that while Marbury was indeed entitled to his commission, and Madison was legally obligated to deliver it, the Supreme Court did not have the constitutional power to issue the writ of mandamus in this particular case. Marshall reasoned that the law Marbury cited as giving the Supreme Court original jurisdiction the power to hear a case for the first time in such matters, the Judiciary Act of 1789, was actually in conflict with the U.S.
Constitution. Therefore, that part of the Judiciary Act was unconstitutional and void.
With this decision, Marshall sidestepped a direct confrontation with the executive branch while simultaneously asserting a monumental power for the judiciary, the power of judicial review.
This is the authority of courts to determine whether legislative acts or executive actions comply with the Constitution.
It allowed the judicial branch to act as a crucial check on the power of the other two branches of government, ensuring that no law or action violated the supreme law of the land.
Marbury v.
Madison was not merely about a forgotten commission. It was about defining the very essence of the judicial branch's power, establishing its role as the ultimate interpreter of the Constitution, and laying the groundwork for how law would be understood and applied for centuries to come. This singular moment underscores the immense significance of courts, judges, and their interpretations in shaping not just legal outcomes, but the very fabric of governments and society itself. The judicial branch, often perceived as the most austere and least overtly political of the three branches of government, is in fact deeply intertwined with the political system. It is the realm where abstract legal principles collide with the messy realities of human disputes, where individual rights are asserted, and where the limits of governmental power are drawn. At its core, the judicial branch is responsible for interpreting and applying the law, a task far more complex and consequential than it might initially appear. This branch is composed of a hierarchical system of courts and the judges who preside over them, each playing a vital role in the administration of justice. In most democratic nations, the judicial structure is organized like a pyramid. At the broad base are the trial courts, sometimes called courts of first instance. This is where the vast majority of legal battles begin and often end. Imagine a dispute between two neighbors over a property line, a person accused of a crime, or a business suing another for breach of contract. These cases originate in trial courts. Here, evidence is presented, witnesses testify, facts are established, and a judge, and sometimes a jury, applies the relevant laws to these determined facts. In the United States, examples at the federal level include the U.S. District Courts, while at the state level, these might be called superior courts, circuit courts, or even specialized courts like family courts or traffic courts. The focus at this level is on resolving factual disagreements and applying the law to specific circumstances. Should one of the parties involved in a trial court case be dissatisfied with the outcome, believing that a legal error was made or that the law was misinterpreted, they typically have the option to appeal. This leads to the next level of the judicial hierarchy, appellate courts. Unlike trial courts, appellate courts generally do not hear new evidence, call witnesses, or determine facts. Their primary function is to review the legal proceedings of the lower court. They examine whether the law was applied correctly, if proper legal procedures were followed, a concept known as due process, which ensures fair treatment through the normal judicial system, and if there were any legal errors that would warrant overturning the trial court's decision. For instance, in the federal system of the United States, a party might appeal a U.S. District Court decision to a U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. These courts are typically composed of a panel of judges, often three, who review legal briefs submitted by the attorneys and sometimes hear oral arguments. Their decisions focus on questions of law, not questions of fact. At the very pinnacle of this judicial pyramid sits the Supreme Court, or Court of Last Resort. This is the ultimate authority within a given legal system, and its decisions are final and binding on all lower courts within its jurisdiction. The U.S. Supreme Court is perhaps the most well-known example. These highest courts often have a discretionary power, meaning they can choose which cases they wish to hear, rather than being obligated to hear every appeal. They tend to select cases that involve significant legal questions, issues of constitutional importance, or situations where there is disagreement among lower appellate courts on how a particular law should be interpreted. The rulings of a Supreme Court not only resolve the specific dispute before it but also establish precedents, principles, or rules established in a previous legal case that are either binding on or persuasive for a court or other tribunal when deciding subsequent cases with similar issues or facts. These precedents guide how similar cases will be decided in the future, thus shaping the development of the law across the entire jurisdiction. Central to the functioning of this entire system are the judges. These individuals are far more than mere arbiters. They are the guardians and interpreters of the law. Their responsibilities are manifold. Firstly, they preside over legal proceedings, ensuring that trials and hearings are conducted fairly, that all parties adhere to established procedural rules, and that order is maintained in the courtroom. This requires a deep understanding of legal procedure and an impartial temperament. Secondly, and perhaps most critically, judges are responsible for interpreting laws. This involves applying statutory law laws passed by a legislature, common law developed by judges through decisions of courts and similar tribunals, and constitutional provisions to the specific facts of a case. This interpretative function is where much of the power and influence of the judiciary lies, as their understanding of a legal text can profoundly alter its meaning and application in society. Finally, judges issue rulings and judgments, which determine the outcome of cases. These can range from deciding who is liable in a civil dispute to determining the guilt or innocence of a defendant in a criminal case and, if guilty, imposing a sentence. The power wielded by judges, particularly in systems like that of the United States, is immense due to the concept of judicial review, as exemplified by Marbury v. Madison. This is the ultimate check on the other branches of government. If a legislature passes a law that a court deems unconstitutional, the court can strike it down, rendering it null and void. If the executive branch takes an action that violates constitutional principles, the judiciary can declare that action unlawful. This ensures that all governmental power remains within the bounds set by the Constitution, reinforcing the idea that no branch of government is above the law. The very act of applying law requires interpretation, and this is where the judicial branch enters its most philosophical and often contentious territory. Legal texts, constitutions, statutes, regulations are not always perfectly clear. They can be ambiguous, vague, or silent on specific issues that arise in novel circumstances. How judges approach this task of giving meaning to legal texts is governed by various philosophies and methods of legal interpretation. These approaches are not mere academic exercises. They have profound real-world consequences, shaping individual rights, economic regulations, and even the fundamental structure of society. One prominent school of thought is textualism, often closely associated with originalism. A textualist judge focuses almost exclusively on the plain meaning of the words in a legal text as they would have been understood at the time the text was enacted. The belief here is that the law is what the words say, not what the drafters might have secretly intended or what contemporary society might wish it to mean. For a textualist, searching for unexpressed intentions or adapting the law to modern sensibilities is seen as overstepping the judicial role and encroaching on the legislative function. Originalism, an interpretative theory predominantly applied to constitutional law, shares this emphasis on historical meaning but can be further refined into two main approaches. Original intent seeks to understand what the specific individuals who drafted and ratified a constitutional provision actually intended it to mean. This can involve delving into historical documents like the Federalist Papers, convention notes, and personal writings of the framers. The challenge, of course, is that the framers were numerous, had diverse intentions, and often compromised on language precisely because they had differing views. An alternative, and increasingly favored, form of originalism is original public meaning. This approach asks how a reasonable, educated person living at the time of the Constitution's adoption would have understood the language used. It focuses on the linguistic meaning prevalent at the time, rather than the subjective intentions of the drafters. Proponents of textualism and originalism argue that these methods limit judicial discretion, promote judicial restraint, meaning judges should defer to the democratically elected branches, and ensure that the law remains stable and predictable, thus upholding the rule of law. Critics, however, contend that it can be incredibly difficult to accurately ascertain original intent or public meaning from centuries past. They argue that such approaches make the law rigid and struggle to apply 18th-century concepts to complex 21st-century issues like the internet, genetic engineering, or modern civil rights, which the framers could not have possibly foreseen. In contrast to originalism and textualism stands living constitutionalism, sometimes referred to as pragmatism. This perspective views the Constitution and other foundational legal texts as dynamic, evolving documents. Proponents of living constitutionalism believe that the meaning of these texts can and should change over time to adapt to new social realities, evolving societal values, and contemporary challenges. For instance, the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution prohibits cruel and unusual punishments. A living constitutionalist might argue that what society considers cruel and unusual has evolved significantly since the 18th century, and therefore the interpretation of that phrase must also evolve to reflect modern ethical standards, potentially prohibiting methods of punishment that were once acceptable. Similarly, the concept of equal protection under the 14th Amendment might be interpreted to extend rights to groups that were not contemplated as equals at the time of its adoption. Advocates argue that this approach keeps the law relevant and effective, allowing it to protect contemporary rights and address modern problems that the framers could not possibly have foreseen. They believe it allows the Constitution to remain a vital governing document rather than a historical relic. Critics, however, often voice concerns that living constitutionalism grants judges too much power, effectively allowing them to impose their own policy preferences and to amend the law without going through the democratic process of constitutional amendment. This, they argue, undermines the rule of law by making legal meaning subjective and unpredictable. A related interpretative philosophy is strict constructionism. While often overlapping with textualism and originalism, strict constructionism generally advocates for interpreting the law narrowly, adhering as closely as possible to the literal text. A strict constructionist judge would be hesitant to read into the law any meanings or implications not explicitly stated by the text. The primary aim is to prevent judicial activism and to uphold the separation of powers by deferring to the legislative branch, which is seen as the legitimate body for creating law. The idea is that if the legislature wanted a particular outcome, it should have stated it clearly in the text. Critics might argue that this approach can lead to rigid and impractical outcomes, failing to account for the broader legislative purpose or unforeseen circumstances that even the most carefully drafted laws cannot fully anticipate. These interpretative philosophies often intersect with broader discussions about judicial activism vs. judicial restraint. These terms describe overarching approaches to the exercise of judicial power, especially when it comes to judicial review. Judicial activism refers to judicial rulings that are perceived as being based more on personal or political considerations of the judges rather than on a strict application of existing law. An activist judge might be seen as more willing to overturn precedents, strike down laws passed by legislatures, or create new legal rights. The implication is often that such judges are overstepping their bounds and legislating from the bench. Conversely, judicial restraint encourages judges to limit the exercise of their own power, deferring to the legislative and executive branches whenever possible. A restrained judge is typically less inclined to strike down laws and tends to follow established precedent, viewing their role as applying, rather than creating, law. It is crucial to note that these terms are often used pejoratively and can be highly subjective. What one person views as judicial activism in defense of fundamental rights, another might see as an unwarranted intrusion into the democratic process. For example, a decision striking down a discriminatory law might be hailed as courageous activism by some, while others might decry it as an overreach if they believe the legislature acted within its powers. The interpretations and decisions emanating from the judicial branch have profound and far-reaching impacts on politics and society. One of the most direct ways is through policy making. While courts do not pass legislation, their rulings can effectively create or shape public policy across a vast array of areas, including civil rights, environmental protection, healthcare, and criminal justice. Consider the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade 1973, which established a woman's constitutional right to an abortion. For nearly five decades, this ruling dictated abortion policy nationwide, shaping political debates, medical practices, and individual lives. Its subsequent overturning in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization 2022 did not merely reverse a legal precedent, it fundamentally altered the political and social landscape, shifting the authority to regulate abortion back to individual states and unleashing a torrent of new legislative and legal battles. The judiciary also plays an indispensable role in the system of checks and balances. The power of judicial review ensures that neither the legislative nor the executive branch can act with impunity or exceed the powers granted to them by the Constitution. This mechanism is critical for preventing potential abuses of power and upholding the rule of law, ensuring that governmental actions remain legitimate and lawful. Furthermore, courts often serve as the ultimate refuge for individuals seeking the protection of their rights. When government overreach threatens fundamental liberties, or when societal discrimination infringes upon equality, the judiciary can be the last resort. Landmark civil rights cases, such as Brown v. Board of Education 1954, which declared state-sponsored segregation in public schools unconstitutional, exemplify the judiciary's power to dismantle injustice and advance equality, often against prevailing social norms or legislative inaction. Given the immense power of the judiciary, the appointment of judges, particularly to higher courts, is a highly politicized process in many democratic systems. Executives, such as presidents, often seek to appoint judges who align with their political ideology and judicial philosophy, hoping to shape the future direction of the law for decades. In the United States, Supreme Court nominations are often intense political battles, with presidents, the Senate, and various interest groups vying for influence. These appointments are viewed as critical opportunities to cement a particular interpretative approach or ideological leaning onto the judiciary, reflecting the understanding that judicial philosophies can have long-lasting societal consequences. Ultimately, the public trust is paramount to the legitimacy and effectiveness of the judicial branch. For courts to function as impartial arbiters and guardians of justice, they must be perceived as fair, unbiased, and committed to the law. When courts are seen as acting politically or when their decisions appear inconsistent or driven by personal agendas, public trust can erode. This erosion can undermine the judiciary's authority, making its rulings less accepted and potentially leading to challenges to its legitimacy as a neutral arbiter. Despite its foundational importance, various aspects of the judicial branch remain subjects of intense debate. A core question revolves around the proper role of judges in a democracy. Should judges be passive arbiters, merely applying laws created by elected legislatures, or should they be active protectors of rights and, to some extent, shapers of societal norms, particularly when democratic processes fail to address fundamental injustices? This question often pits those who champion judicial restraint against those who advocate for a more robust, even activist, judiciary. Another critical area of discussion concerns the balance between judicial independence and accountability. To ensure impartial decisions, judges are often granted significant independence, sometimes serving lifetime appointments, to insulate them from political pressure or popular whims. However, in a democratic society, there is also an expectation of accountability. How can judges be independent enough to make difficult, unpopular, but legally sound decisions, while also being accountable to democratic principles and the will of the people? This tension is rarely fully resolved and often fuels debates about judicial selection methods or potential reforms. The impact of judicial selection methods itself is a contentious topic. Does the partisan nature of appointing judges, especially through executive nominations and legislative confirmations, inherently undermine judicial legitimacy by injecting political considerations into a branch designed to be impartial? Or is it simply a reflection of democratic choices, allowing the public, through their elected representatives, to have a say in the composition of the judiciary? Different countries employ various methods, from direct election of judges to appointment by judicial commissions, each with its own perceived advantages and disadvantages regarding impartiality, expertise, and accountability. Furthermore, the interpretation of broad constitutional principles remains a perennial source of contention. Concepts like due process, equal protection, or unreasonable searches and seizures are not self-defining. How should these abstract ideas be understood and applied in modern contexts, often vastly different from the times in which they were originally conceived? This brings the debate between originalism/textualism and living constitutionalism to the forefront, as different interpretative lenses yield dramatically different answers and societal outcomes. Finally, there is an ongoing concern about the perceived politicization of the judiciary. Critics argue that courts, particularly supreme courts, are becoming increasingly politicized, acting more like legislative bodies engaged in policy disputes rather than dispassionate arbiters of law. This perception is often exacerbated during highly contentious cases that touch upon deeply divisive social issues, leading some to question the judiciary's neutrality and its adherence to purely legal principles. The judicial branch is not a static institution but a dynamic one, constantly grappling with evolving societal needs, new legal challenges, and enduring philosophical questions about the nature of justice and the role of law in a free society. Its strength lies not just in its legal pronouncements, but in its ability to maintain public trust and legitimacy while navigating the complex interplay between legal principle, political reality, and societal progress. The interpretations rendered by judges are not just technical legal findings. They are profound statements about who we are as a society and what values we collectively uphold.